I get more relationship questions than all other messages combined. That's why I created Love and Abuse. Head over to loveandabuse.com if you are having difficulty in your relationship. Maybe you'll figure out what's really going on.
Life presents the toughest challenges. Every day you are faced with decisions that test your ability to express who you really want to be in this world. We're told to keep saying affirmations and keep thinking positively, but what do you do when that stuff doesn't work? Welcome to the Overwhelmed Brain, where you'll learn to make decisions that are right for you so that you can create the life you want now.
Hey, this is Paul Coliani, and I want to help you increase your emotional intelligence, handle toxic situations with grace and ease, and give you the tools to show up as your authentic self. This show consists of my personal opinions and is meant for informational purposes only. So glad you made it. Thank you for stopping by. I'll see you next week. No, I'm so glad you're here. Stick around because I want to talk about this very short message I received, and I have a feeling a lot of people are going to relate to this. This person wrote, "I'm tired of feeling so disconnected from myself. I'm tired of feeling stupid, tired of feeling not competent, tired of feeling I'm not interesting or cool or funny enough, tired of not being able to communicate and expressing as effectively as I want to. Tired of being so hard on myself. I'm tired of not being able to have fun and take life lightly." Thank you for sharing that. And, you know, I get it. I get it. There's a point where you're just tired of everything. Look at the past year or two. I mean, this is 2021. We just went through COVID. We just went through this political stuff with the new president, and the old president is claiming it's a false victory, and I'm not even going to get into that. I'm not going to talk about any of that stuff. This isn't that kind of show, but it's tiring. All of this stuff is tiring, and I don't even think this person's talking about what we hear on the media or social media or see on Facebook, whatever it is. This person's tired, is tired of a lot of personal things going on in their life. I'm just going to say he. There's a lot of personal things going on in his life. So for one, I'm just validating what you're going through. You know, you have every right to feel tired, to feel like you've had enough, you don't want to deal with this anymore, and you just want it to stop. You just want this ridiculousness, whatever it is, this feeling, like you said, feeling stupid, feeling incompetent, feeling not interesting or cool or funny enough. I don't know if you remember me talking about a time when I really thought I was stupid. I knew it. I knew it. I was in my mid-20s, and I knew I was stupid. I used the word retarded back then. That's not politically correct, but that's the word I used. I said I felt retarded, and I resisted it. I couldn't stand that I had any type of mental health challenge. I didn't want to believe it. I didn't want to believe that I was at all less than I wanted to be. And I'm not saying that anyone that has a mental deficiency of any sort is any less or any more or anything. I'm just saying back then, this is how I felt. And I am here validating you and how you feel right now. If you're tired, yeah, I bet you are. I'm so sorry you feel that way. I wish I could give you a magic pill. In fact, I do have a verbal magic pill that I want you to swallow right now. And this is a question that I like to ask people that are just, I don't know, sick of everything. I'm done with it all. I'm done with this. When you get to that point, when you get to the point where you're just done with everything that's going on, then my question, my magic pill question is, what can be taken away from your life to make it better? That's my magic pill question. It's probably not worded the best, but that's what I'm asking. What can be taken away from your life to make it better? If that doesn't work for you, how about What person, if they didn't exist in your life, would make life easier for you? How about this? What challenge is currently going on in your life that, if it didn't exist, would make life easier, a bit more satisfying, a bit more comfortable, maybe even peaceful, maybe even happy? What challenge exists in your life that, if it didn't exist, would make life better? So this is a bit of a reverse engineering way to approach this. Is we can look at things that we're tired of and think, okay, I'm tired of, you know, working. I'm tired of working. All right, so you might say, if I didn't have a job, then I would feel better. Maybe that's true. Or maybe it's not about work at all. Maybe it's about something else. I know that work sucked for me when I was going through relationship issues. And then when I was in a great relationship, work seemed so much better. I was in a better mood, I was happier, and I couldn't blame work. So relationship issues can certainly do that. And it doesn't have to be romantic relationships. It could be family. It could be somebody you know, an acquaintance, a friend. It could be the sales clerk that you had an argument with. It could be a coworker, whatever. It could be anybody. That's why I asked the question, if a certain person didn't exist in your life anymore, what would that do? How would that change your life? Would it make it better? And who is that person? These are good questions to help you go through a process of elimination that, what I like to call, clears the path to happiness, or at least some sense of comfort, or even more, at least some sense of not feeling negative or pain, or in this case, tired. Now let's talk about tired. You know, what makes you tired? Oh my God, everything makes me tired. I'm tired about everything. Yeah, that's what I'm hearing in this message. But when I ask that question, what's the first thing that comes to mind? What makes you tired? Usually the first thing that comes to mind is one of the bigger things, and it may be the biggest thing. What makes me tired? The first thing that comes to mind is, oh, this person, this job, the place I live, my parents, my sister, my brother, my spouse. What makes you tired? My car, it always has problems. It's driving me crazy. How about I'm tired of not being able to pay my bills? I'm tired of not having enough money. That affects a lot of us. That affects so many people. And when it affects you, it affects the rest of your life. I remember being married and having these financial problems. It was hard to be happily married. It was hard to be married when we were struggling in debt. It was challenging. It sucked. Because there was always something to worry about. So one of the things I learned when I was tired of things or stressed out by things or just freaking out by things is, when the worst case scenario comes true, you don't worry about it anymore. Let me say that again. When the worst thing that could possibly happen happens, you don't worry about it anymore because it happened. It's in the past. You may have something new to worry about, but this other thing that you were worried about doesn't exist anymore. The example I use is, again, when I was married, we had financial problems, and it went on for months and months. It was around the mortgage crisis back in late 2000s, and suddenly we were out of work, we were out of a home, and we had no money coming in, and that was it. It was the highest level of stress. It gave me stomach aches, probably gave me headaches, I don't remember, but it just was something that wore us down, and it was very difficult to look at each other and say, I love you so much. No matter what, at least we're together. It was very difficult to go through that.
But what happened, within a few months' time, we were broke. We had basically nothing. We had a car, that was fortunate, and we had her mom's apartment, which was a 600 square foot, very tiny space that she allowed us to live in. Very grateful for that. But we were waking up every morning and going to the soup kitchen. We had zero in our bank accounts. But what was interesting about that is that we weren't in debt anymore. In fact, we had no debt because we had no money. And even if we did have debt, what else could happen? There's nothing else that could go wrong. I mean, we could lose the apartment for sure, but at this point, we felt like there was no deeper we could go. We were already there. We were waking up at 6 a.m., standing in line in the cold to wait for food, not only to eat that day, but to take with us. You know, taking expired bread and expired foods that stores were so charitable in giving. And I look back at those days and I am so grateful that I went through that experience, because what happened was I reached the precipice of all my fear, all my anxiety, and I jumped. And this is a metaphor. This is not a real thing. I reached the highest level of stress because my biggest worry, my biggest fears came true. But what's good about that is that when what you fear comes true, the fear is behind you instead of in front of you. It's back there now instead of in front of you, instead of up there. And I'd rather have it back there. And so we were broke. We were getting up early and we were grateful. We didn't have any more debt, and we realized that debt kept us in fear. So, you know, I'm just giving you this one example because money is a big issue for a lot of people. But having that experience where we lost almost everything gave us a new perspective that when you lose everything, you can still get through it, and the threshold of fear is met. And when it's met, where does it go? It goes behind you. You don't live in that constant state of the threshold. You get past it. It maxes out. There's nowhere else to go except past it and beyond it. I don't know if this is going to help this person who wrote. He didn't leave a question, but he certainly shared that for a reason. And I think when you share it, that's part one of helping you process it and release it, because what you're doing is tapping into that negative energy inside of you, however it's stored. But what ends up happening is we get tired of things, or we get stressed out by things, and we stuff it down, we swallow it, and we can feel it. I felt it in my stomach for so long. I felt all that stress and negativity and fear, and I just didn't like the way it felt. Obviously, it's not a good feeling, but I reached the precipice. The thing I feared happening happened, and then I jumped off that metaphoric precipice and found out on the other side of it, the fear that I had was gone, and now I'm living in a new reality. I mean, back then, I found out that after the fear has reached its threshold, beyond it is a new reality. What does this mean to you? The person who wrote, you know, you might be tired of so many things, but what would happen if you decided that it was okay to be those things? What if you decided it was okay to be incompetent? What if you decided it was okay to be stupid? What if you decided not to care? I don't care if people think I'm stupid. I don't care if people think I'm incompetent. I'm saying this right now, actually. I don't care if people think I'm stupid. I would rather have them not. I hope you're not listening if you think I'm stupid, but if you do, maybe you're trying to catch me saying something stupid. That's fine. You know, I learned something a long time ago when I first started this podcast back in 2013. By the beginning of 2014, I decided that this was good therapy for me, because I'm going to put myself out there. I'm going to tell you stories. I'm going to be embarrassed about some of the things I say. I'm going to be afraid of what you might think of me. I'm going to put myself out there to be judged, to be criticized, to be commented on everywhere.
to be chastised, to have my credibility questioned, to have my reputation questioned. Everything that you can think of when you put yourself out there and allow people or give people the platform to judge you and criticize you and say anything they want about you, you're going to hear it all. But that's good too, because what ends up happening is that you're facing everything you fear. A lot of people, for example, with social anxiety, don't want to feel the judgmental eyes of others. They don't want to feel judged. They don't want to feel criticized. They don't want to be watched. They feel like there's just so many eyes on them and it just freaks them out. And I totally get it. You know, I'm not putting you down for that. I created a program called the Safe System for people with social anxiety and generalized anxiety. But there's a lot of people out there with anxiety that feel this way. And I like to walk into a room and imagine everyone feels like me, first of all. I see everyone and I think, wow, all these people are as anxious as I am, if not more. First of all, that makes me feel better. That makes me feel good knowing that they all think I'm judging them. That can be helpful. I also like to walk into the room and think, everything they're judging me about and they're criticizing me about, which probably isn't true at all because why are they paying attention to me in the first place? But let's just say they were. Let's just bring out my worst fear, my worst anxiety, or your worst fear, your worst anxiety, and you walk into a room and you believe everyone's looking at you and judging you and criticizing you. What would happen if you just said, yep, what you see is what you get. Hey, you think I'm stupid? I am. You think I'm ugly? I am. You think I'm too fat? That's me. You think I'm too skinny? That's me. You think I'm too tall? You think I'm too short? You think I'm too black or white? That is all me. Yes, everything you're thinking is true. What else you got? That's where I like to go. What else you got? Hey, you know what? You criticized me for that. What else you got? Come on, bring it on. I'm not here to crumble. I'm here to admit everything you think about me, which we should know is just their reality. And if they have any ill or judgmental thoughts about you, that's really coming from an unhealed place in them. Because anyone who criticizes us, that's not very nice. And if they're not very nice, they must have some unhealed stuff going on. So poor them. Poor them. I mean, if you want to get rid of your anxiety, look at somebody and go, wow, that poor person. Wow, they have so many issues. Look at them criticizing and looking down at others. They must have a lot of pain inside them. I feel so bad for that person. I'm not telling you to do any of this. I'm just giving you ideas, giving you thoughts and how I approach life. Because sometimes we're going to meet people that are judgmental. They are critical. They are mean. They are toxic. And what are they going to do about it? Okay, this is what you said about me. What else you got? Bring it on. I love that attitude. Just bring it on. What else you got? Give me your worst. Insult me. Oh, that's not good enough. Insult me more. You know, I learned this lesson a long time ago when I was in high school. I used to get bullied. I was a skateboarder. I had long hair. I resemble nothing the way I used to be. I do not resemble that at all. And what we called the jocks back then and some other smart alecky people, they used to bully people like me. They used to laugh at me. They used to make fun of my name. They used to call me things. They used to do things to make me look like an idiot in front of people. And I hated it. I absolutely hated it. And I pretended to laugh it off. But inside, I was just getting angry. I was holding it in. I was getting so angry. And I just didn't want to deal with it anymore. And I didn't want to fight. I was definitely not a fighter. I hated confrontation. So I didn't know what to do. So I would go to school every day and hope they just wouldn't make fun of me that day. I remember one day, this one kid ripped my shirt off. I had to go through the day with a half shirt. And I pretended it didn't bother me. And I was just so frustrated. I didn't know what to do. And so one day I decided that, I don't know how this came about, but I decided that I was going to stop resisting the names they called me, the fun they made of me. I was going to stop resisting all of it. And I was just going to accept it. because my resistance to it kept it alive. It kept it energized. So all this resistance I had going to school, I just decided the next time they make fun of my last name, I'm going to accept it. I'm going to say, thanks. I'm going to say, yeah, I'm going to respond when they call me that name. I'm going to say, yeah, that's me. I love it. And then I'm going to tell my friends, hey, you got to call me this name. I want you to call me that name too. I'm going to go around and I'm just going to accept the bad name calling and the bullying and just tell people, yeah, that's me. I go by that name. It was mostly name calling, but I was going to walk in that day and say, I don't care anymore, because that's what I got to. I reached that precipice. I was sick of it. I was done. I was tired of it. And I walked through the school and somebody said, hey, colonoscopy. That's what they called me. And if anybody from high school is listening to this now, yes, you were a total jerk. But that's what they did. They called me that name. And for the first time, I said, hey, how's it going? And I don't think they responded to that very well, because they wanted me to be disempowered. They wanted me in a weakened state. They wanted me to feel weak. They wanted to be the bully. And for the first time, I didn't feel bullied. I allowed that name to come through my personal boundaries, my personal values, the self-worth and self-esteem that I could barely hold on to. I just let it come in. I just let it hit me. You know what? That's me. I'm colonoscopy. And that whole day when people said, hey, colonoscopy, I said, hey, how you doing? And what do you want? What do you need? I didn't resist it at all. I didn't look down like I used to. I didn't say, shut up. I didn't try to call them a name back like I tried to, because they always made fun of me if I called them a name too. It didn't matter what I did, so I just decided to let it hit me. Bring it on. And I did. I let it hit me. Hey, colonoscopy. Hey, how you doing? It took a day and a half. That's it. It took 1.5 days. I was there the whole day. They called me that name. The next day, they called me that name a couple times. And then from that point on, they stopped picking on me. I had been dealing with that for months. I was sick of it. It was making me ill. It was making my stomach hurt. And the next day I walked in, and a few times I heard it, and then it was over. It was done. They stopped picking on me. I mean, in almost every way, they stopped picking on me. I was no longer a victim. I think that's an important point. I mean, when you decide that you're not going to be a victim anymore, it doesn't always mean that you're going to fight back and you're going to punch somebody. It doesn't mean that. I mean, it can. I'm not saying that you shouldn't or should. Sometimes you need to. I'm not telling you to go in that direction. But I decided to go in the opposite direction. I decided to what I like to call take the Tai Chi route. The Tai Chi route redirects force. What I learned in Tai Chi is when somebody throws a punch at you, instead of being the wall of resistance, which is where you block them or you actually get hit, all that resistance, all that force is hitting their fist and affecting their body, and it's going to hurt even more even if you block. How about you just move to the side and allow their fist to go by you? That's what I learned in Tai Chi, is just move to the side and let that fist go by, because it's going to waste a lot of their energy. And that's what I did. I did this emotional Tai Chi where I wasn't going to resist anymore and allow their force to go right by me. And the way I did that is to decide to accept whatever they're saying, just to see what happened. Doesn't mean I really felt this way about myself. It doesn't mean that I felt any less worthy, and I knew I should have been treated better, but I wanted to see what happened, because I was sick of resisting it, and every time I resisted it, I always got the same results. So I did this emotional Tai Chi. They call me some bad names. I let the negative energy flow by me, and I let the name land on me because it didn't bother me anymore. Go ahead, call me that name. So that's what they did. They call me that name. And the next day, after about a half a day, they stopped calling me that name, and I was no longer picked on. And I felt great. I felt like there was a weight lifted off of me.
all because I let go of the resistance. This is what happens when we get so tight inside ourselves because we don't want something to happen or we don't want people to think of us that way. But when we realize that some people want us to be in that weakened state where we are more vulnerable to their attack, and we decide to change that weakened state to an empowered state where it doesn't matter what somebody thinks of us, and we can just say, yeah, that's me. How you doing? It's not that you're calling yourself that. It's that you're taking their power away. And that's the most important part of what I'm saying in this segment. If you want to take their power away, then whatever reaction that you normally have, make it opposite. If you have a negative reaction normally, you can make it positive. And when you make it positive, they're not going to expect that. It will confuse them. And because they're not getting the results that they want anymore, they're very likely going to stop. Does this explain everyone in every single situation? No. But every time I've tried this, it has worked. There are some people that are relentless. They'll put you down until you are on the ground eating dirt. I know this is true, but for the most part, most people that do anything harmful like that, anything hurtful, they don't expect that kind of response. And suddenly, if it goes away, if life is better after that, then maybe it was worth trying out. So the person who wrote and said they were tired of everything, but I hope some of these questions that I asked have helped. You know, I like to go into a space of eliminating the things that prevent happiness. And sometimes that just means using your imagination first. I use a mind map technique sometimes where I write myself, my name in the middle, put a circle around it, and then I put these lines out and I put more circles on those lines, and I put everything in my life in those circles, usually the major stuff like the people, the places, the jobs, everything that's going on in my life right now. I just put them in the circles around me, who's in the center. And then I cross out one of the circles. Hey, that circle is my stepfather. I'm going to cross him out. Now I'm going to look at this mind map that I created and ask myself, do I feel better now? If I cross that person out, do I feel better now? That person's not in my life anymore. It doesn't exist. How do I feel? How about this job? I'm going to cross this job out. This job's not in my life anymore. How does that feel? Wow, that kind of feels good. What if I put that job back on? Well, I don't really like that. What if I cross this person off? Whoa, there's a new feeling. Sometimes it takes a process like this to understand exactly where the problems lie in your life. So I hope this is helpful to you. Thank you so much for writing that. I don't know if you really had a question because the email got cut off, but I hope I was able to address something that you were going through. And no matter who you are, if you heard this and it has helped you, good. If it hasn't helped you, we have another segment. It's coming up after our sponsor, but I hope you stick around and we'll read another email. It'll be a little different than this one, but we'll be right back and I will get to that right after this. So there's a casual mobile puzzle game that my girlfriend and I like to play, and now her mom and other people that I've gotten to try it, they've become a little obsessed with it, which is fun because I don't want to be the only one. So when my girlfriend says, I'm going to be playing Best Fiends, so you can go read or you can go do something else, or maybe she'll play right before bed, and she just wants to get that next character or pass that next level. And I always listen to what she's... It's actually funny. I always listen to what she's saying because when she plays, she talks to herself. Well, she's talking to the game and she'll say things like, wow, there's a lot of little tricks to this, or I just got the jackpot, and she gets so excited. And then she'll say, I got a new fiend. This is what Best Fiends does to her. It makes her happy. It makes her excited to sit down when she just needs a break, when she just wants to take some time to herself and just do something mindless for a while, even though there is a lot of strategy. I've played this game many times. There's a lot
of strategy. You drag your finger and match these shapes, and as you match them, the ones above it fall, and then you set off bombs and missiles and all kinds of little things to help you clear the screen. And that's what it is. It's just level after level of clearing the screen, and it does something to you. It makes you feel like you're accomplishing something, like it's worth the journey. And I've had fun, my girlfriend has had fun, and they're competing right now, my girlfriend and her mom, they're competing which level they can get to. So I think my girlfriend's in the lead, which is a surprise because her mom was instantly taken with the game. So I want you to check it out too. Go to Google Play or the Apple App Store and download Best Fiends today. It's free to download. There's been over 100 million downloads for a reason. And you know, who says kids have to have all the fun? We can play games too. There's no reason why we can't. And sometimes you want to unplug from the stresses of the real world and take a break. Check out Best Fiends. That's friends without the R, Best Fiends, F-I-E-N-D-S, over in Google Play or the Apple App Store. Welcome back. I'm going to read you another email. This one is just as impactful as the last one as far as life working against you. It sometimes feels like life works against you, and some people feel that way all the time. If you feel like life is working against you, no matter what you do, things don't work out, then, you know, this is why I do this show. I've been doing this for 8 years. I am trying to help you see that there is more to life than what it has been doing to you and how you are showing up in it. How you show up in life is also how it shows up for you. So I want to read this email and thinking about that point, how you show up for life is how it shows up for you. We're going to take that point and kind of pick this email apart and hopefully give this person some guidance. So thanks in advance for writing this. I'm going to read you parts of it because there are things I want to keep private so I don't reveal who they are. This person wrote, I've been listening for a while and I need to thank you for the moments of micro revelations I've had. That's what I call those moments when you realize a deep rooted reason that you do the things you do and why and how they become destructive. You are welcome. I'm glad you're figuring this stuff out. Thank you for sharing that. In the last few years, I have done so much growing and I'm proud of it, but I've hit a roadblock. And I think it's not small, but it does either make or break me. I don't know how to fix it myself. I need a solution. Maybe you can shed some light on it. Here it is. I'm a small child in a large family, and I've been dealing with physical and emotional abuse since I was a toddler. I don't even think I ever really had people that cared about me and gave me any positive connection. I learned very early in life that I need to read the room and fend for myself because it didn't matter that they were my caregivers. They were hurting me in every conceivable manner. So I grew up thirsty for real relationships and also aware of the hurt that it can cause. I am deeply afraid, although desperately in need of a relationship. Whenever one approaches, I don't establish boundaries because I'm too afraid they'll leave. But once they trespass those boundaries, I run without any explanation. I simply exclude them from my life, so that they don't have the chance to hurt me again or even have the opportunity to fix things. When things get really bad in a relationship, I will run away and then I will come back with my tail between my legs when I was feeling lonely. I finally broke up with the person that I spent several years with only a couple years ago and I stuck to that decision. That's the past, but I want to talk about now, the present. I don't know how to deal with the small betrayals in life. I don't know how to forgive and move on. When I feel hurt, I just run and completely close up to any kind of relationship with that person, and I just run away and keep silent. Yes, silent treatment is a form of abuse, but I don't want to do it or choose to. I simply don't have or know another mechanism to deal with being hurt or perceiving being hurt. I freeze. It's so deep inside me. Even writing you this, I feel overwhelmed and I have a knot in my stomach, and I can't find the right words for describing it. I even went back to therapy and got some help. I meditate. I do a gratitude journal, and I made a lot of good changes. I keep doing the right things,
Still, I have huge issues and cannot relate normally with people. I'm causing problems at work as well. Do those people have a right to speak abusively to me? Probably not, but still, I am responsible for how I answer back, and I don't have the right answers. I just keep creating conflicts. I then don't deal with those conflicts, and I just close up. I know you don't have much time to answer these questions, but any feedback would be much appreciated. Am I crazy? Am I a narcissist? Is my self-esteem that low? How do I fix myself, Paul? How do I love myself? Thank you for reading this. Thank you for sharing it. Again, just like the last segment, I bet there's a lot of people that can relate. If not fully, at least partially. And if you can't relate to this, if you're listening to this now and you can't relate, I'm sure there's something in here that everyone can learn from. And let me just address some of the highlighted items on my screen here, because I have it right up here. One of the things you said is silent treatment is a form of abuse. Let me read you something that I wrote in a group I run for people that are dealing with emotional abuse. Do not confuse emotional withdrawal with the silent treatment. There are two versions of the silent treatment. One is when you're hurt, offended, afraid, or just need time to process information. You need time to yourself. Your silence is about you and only you, even though it usually has to do with something that someone else did or said. So that's the first version of the silent treatment. The second version is when you withhold love and attention from someone in order to make them comply or submit to something that you want them to do or a way that you want them to think. That is emotional abuse. That is controlling. It is all about the other person and making them do what you want them to do, regardless of how they feel about it, though they will usually feel guilty or sad because of your silence. Now, those are the two versions of silent treatment. Emotional withdrawal is different. It is similar to the first version of silent treatment, which is when you're hurt, offended, or afraid and need time to process information, but it has to do with your past, typically. It's something that you've been traumatized by in the past and you haven't healed from yet. So you withdraw because you don't know how to handle the present moment. So again, emotional withdrawal and the non-abusive form of silent treatment, the self-protective version, they can sometimes be the same thing because of your past trauma. However, the non-abusive version of silent treatment usually has to do with a reaction to something happening today, as if it is a surprise that you've never experienced before. Emotional withdrawal is usually a fear realized, something that you've been dealing with for a while. So if somebody does something or says something or yells at you and you get triggered by it and you want to protect yourself, you are very likely going to go into a non-abusive form of silent treatment, which really isn't even fair to call it silent treatment, but you are silent. You withdraw in order to protect yourself. The abusive form of silent treatment is where you withdraw in order to make them feel bad and make them comply and make them do things that you want them to do. It's a control tactic. So to the person who wrote this message, if you were doing this version of the silent treatment where your purpose was to control them and make them do what you wanted them to do, then yes, there may have been an abusive element to it. However, I'm pretty sure after reading this that you were doing it for self-protection. In fact, I would bet a year's paycheck on it. You are definitely doing this for self-protection because of your traumatic past. I want you to give yourself a break about this silent treatment. It's not abuse that you're doing. It's self-protection. In fact, almost everything you're doing is self-protection. There's a fear inside of you that you don't want to come to fruition. You don't want the fear to manifest into whatever it's going to manifest into, because you're just too afraid of facing that fear. You're too afraid of what it could be and what it might lead to. So I wanted to address that right off. I don't think you're being abusive at all. And let me address your final questions before I go back to the rest of the email. Are you crazy? You probably feel it. You probably feel like you're going crazy, but no, crazy people don't write like you do. Are you a narcissist? No, because you wouldn't care. If you were a narcissist, you wouldn't care that anyone was affected. You wouldn't care whose feelings you hurt. You wouldn't care about any of that. I don't think you're a narcissist. Again, I would bet a paycheck on it. Definitely not. Is your self-esteem that low? Your self-esteem probably took a hit since you were a baby. That's when your self-worth starts to build and develop and grow. And if your self-worth isn't nurtured, if the people around you, your caretakers, the people that are supposed to be taking care of you, if they aren't nurturing you and making you feel as worthy as you really are, then yes, your self-esteem takes a hit. I look at self-esteem as the natural evolution of self-worth. Your self-worth develops in childhood and grows into your self-esteem, how you feel about yourself as you get older. Your self-worth is usually how you define yourself through other people's eyes. This is how worthy I feel. The trick is to find ourselves worthy through our own eyes. Because, quite frankly, there are some toxic people out there that will make us think that we are less than we are. And when you have those people around you when you're a child, you take it very personally, you take it very seriously, and you think it's the truth. I don't know if this is going to help you to hear from me, but it's not the truth. You're not unworthy. You're not unlovable. You are definitely worthy and lovable and important and probably have the biggest heart and just want to share it with somebody, but you've been poisoned from childhood to think that you aren't all that. I tell you what, I felt this way. I felt this way before, thinking that I wasn't all that. So I had to take a trip to my ego and start filling it up and start convincing myself that not only was I all that, but I was a great catch, and anyone would be stupid not to want me. I started pushing my insecurities outside myself and viewed myself as attractive and worthy and magnetic and all the things that I really want to feel about myself. I started making that happen instead, just by saying, I'm a good catch. It's too bad they lost out on me. That sounds so narcissistic. That sounds so egoistic. I know. But there's the pendulum swing of narcissism, the full egocentric, self-centered feeling that you are the center of the world and everyone should bow to you. There's that end of the pendulum swing. And then there's the other end where you have the lowest self-worth, the lowest self-esteem, and you think that you are nothing. And when you feel that way, it's important to access the ego so that you can bring the pendulum swing back. I promote the idea of nurturing a healthy ego, because when you're in the red, in the negative part of the pendulum swing, if you want to look at it that way, you want to bring that pendulum swing back up and beyond the center of the swing, the balance point. And the reason you do that is because you have to feel so good about yourself to get out of this low state that you can put yourself in the higher state for a little while to refill what's been empty for a long time, so that the pendulum can come back to that balanced state in the middle. And one of the ways I did it as a teenager was I bought a muscle car. I've told this story before and I'm not going to spend any time on it, but I bought a muscle car because it was so cool. And when I started driving that around, I started feeling pretty good about myself. You know, I don't care if you buy a $100 pen, you know, just a simple writing instrument that we can get for 50 cents, not even. But if you went and bought a $100 pen and it had your name on it, guess what? That's pretty cool. It may not be something that you do, but I'm just giving you thoughts and giving you a direction to start thinking about treating yourself as more worthy than these other toxic people have convinced you of. You are worthy, you are lovable, and you have to prove it to yourself, because if you don't prove it to yourself, how is anybody else going to see that? And I know that makes you sound like, if I don't get to work, I'm never going to have a relationship. I think you're going to have a lot of relationships. They're just not going to turn out the way you want. Because, I mean, I'm talking to the person who wrote, what you're telling me is that you get into these relationships and you get so afraid as soon as they cross a boundary that you take off. And you probably take off because you don't want to deal with the emotional pain associated with that. And we're going to talk about that in a second. But I think the very first thing you need to do is treat yourself as worthy. You need to do some self-parenting and be your own mom, be your own dad, be your own caretaker so that you can start rebuilding that worth inside of you. You need to do this for yourself. When I was in that low state, I started treating myself like I deserved royal treatment. And I dipped into the ego and kept nurturing that and letting myself know that I am all that, and anyone would be crazy not to want me, not to be around me. And again, it does sound egoistic, but what I'm doing is I'm starting to fill the lowest part of what I felt inside of me, starting to fill that up with positivity, with a little over the top stuff, so that I can get out of that negative space. So when someone writes to me and says, I'm in the lowest spot and I don't know what to do, I'm going to tell you, you're a great catch. It's not about how you look. It's not about how much money you have. It's not about how you think. It's not about what you believe. You're still a great catch. I know this because I've seen so many people in relationships that other people will go, how did that person get into a relationship? And that could mean anything. You look at some people and you think, wow, they're in a relationship with each other? That doesn't even look like a match, but there they are. And it seems to work and they seem to be happy. So I've seen it over and over and over again. My mom is in her late 70s. And she thought, that's it, no more relationships. After she left my abusive stepfather, after she left him for about 40 years, she said, that's it, it's over. I'm not looking for a guy, I don't care. I want to be single, I'm okay with that. And then one day out of the blue, someone came up to her and asked her to coffee. Just one day, and she thought, what? She didn't want a date. And she decided to date, and he was and still is enamored by her, and he loves her, and he treats her like a queen, like she's never been treated. And she thought it was over. She thought she was never going to find someone else again. But what she did was work on herself. She worked on self-care. She worked on self-nurturing. She decided that she was a good catch, even though she said she was going to stay single. You know what? I'm a great catch. His loss. He's a jerk. I don't want him in my life, and I don't want anybody in my life. So his loss. Those weren't her words exactly, but that's what I witnessed. I witnessed her just cleaning herself up, emotionally and psychologically speaking. I'm going to clean myself up. I'm not looking for a relationship. I don't want one. And that's what she did. She focused on herself. This is all about bringing the best version of you, whether you get into a relationship or not. But when you get into a relationship, you have worked on yourself, you have taken care of yourself, you've nurtured yourself, and you have let yourself know that you are worthy of respect and worthy of boundaries, so that when people cross them, you can say, no, I have a boundary there. You aren't allowed to do that. You aren't allowed to do that. So I'm going to stop you right there, because I don't want that in my life. I don't want somebody who does that to me. I know that's easier said than done, because this person who wrote says, you know, my boundaries are crossed and I get so afraid I just leave. So let's visit this part. And I know there's just a ton of stuff packed into this email that we could talk about for a long time, but I'm going to address this fear part and maybe one more thing. But the fear you have that pops up when a boundary is crossed, I need you to visit the end result of this fear manifesting. I need you to go there. This is the worst case scenario. But what I want you to do is ask yourself, what would happen if I stayed? So instead of running away, and this isn't necessarily the worst case yet, but we're going to ramp up to that. What would happen if instead of running away, you know, because somebody crossed your boundary, what would happen if I instead stayed? Now, you may say, well, that person might yell at me, or they might bring up an emotion in me that I can't handle, or whatever it is. But what would happen if you stayed? Let's just say that the doors were locked and you couldn't leave. I know, it's anxiety-inducing. I know. If you're in that space, if you're thinking like this, it absolutely isn't anxiety-inducing. But you have no choice. You have to stay. And I'm going to say this, that this person that you're staying with, they crossed your boundaries, they are not physically violent. So I'm not going to put you in this imaginary situation with a physically violent person. They are just, whatever, an emotional jackass. They're not a good person. They are hurtful to you. So you have emotions about that. So the doors are locked and they cross your boundary. Now you can't leave. That means you have to face this. I'm not trying to put you in there to bring anxiety into your life. I just want to know factually what would happen. Let's just say that you said, well, I would feel so much fear that I might crumble. Let's just say that you said that. I have no idea what you might say, but let's just say I might crumble. I would ask you, okay, what does crumble mean? Does that mean you would have a nervous breakdown? Does that mean you would just cry or scream? What would happen? You have no choice. You have to face it. You have to stay. Well, if I stay, they might scream at me. Or if I honor myself and say, you crossed my boundary, I'll feel a fear that I know I can't handle. So this is where we limit our thinking. When we say something like, I know I won't be able to handle it. When we say anything like that, you have to go deeper. You have to get past this wall that you put up and ask yourself, what does that mean? What does it mean I can't handle it? It means I will be so scared that I'll be shaking and my heart is going to be beating. I'm going to have a panic attack. Okay, that's one step closer to the wall, but it's still not the wall that you put up, this wall of thinking that you stopped thinking because you said, well, I just won't be able to handle it. There's the wall. That's the obstacle of thinking that you can't get past. But I need you to think beyond the wall. What is going to happen if the panic attack occurs, if you end up crying uncontrollably, if your biggest fear comes true? What will actually happen? Well, if I have a panic attack, I'll pass out. Whatever it is for you. But put yourself there. Have that panic attack in your mind. Not for real. This is a visualization. What happens when you reach that wall and you go past it? The wall of thinking that blocks you from ever wanting to know what happens next. But let's go there. You can't leave. Now you're having a panic attack and now it's really happening and you know your boundaries were crossed and now you have these thoughts and these emotions and there are probably so much to handle, yet you're there and you have no choice but to face them, maybe for the first time, and just let them come to the surface. And then what happens? I just talked about this somewhere. I don't know if it was the beginning of this episode or another episode somewhere. I said, when you reach the maximum threshold of your fear, where it actually happens, then everything you fear disappears because it's in the past. So this is what happens, is that we go around fearing what might happen, so we run away. Instead of locking ourselves in this space to let it happen, to find out if we can survive it. That's the scariest thing, isn't it? You have to stick around in your biggest fear to figure out if you can survive it. Why would I want to do that? Because when you do that, you discover that you will survive it and you will get past it. And what you feared is now behind you, and now you can face the future with a different perspective. I don't tell you this because it's something I read in a textbook. I tell you this because I did it. I've done it two or three times in my life, and the changes that happened were so profound, it was like a spiritual experience. It was like the hand of God came down and touched me and got me through that moment. You know, I don't talk spirituality here, but I don't know how else to explain it. It was just so powerful. And what I'm talking about is when I let the worst thing I could possibly imagine come to fruition. In fact, I had no choice a couple times where the worst thing was happening and I had no choice but to accept it. For me, the doors were locked. I could not escape it. What I feared losing happened. And when it happened, the fear disappeared because what I feared losing was gone. This is a time in my life where I broke down in the desert. I lost my car. I lost thousands of dollars worth of stuff that I owned. And I let it all go. And before that moment, it was the height of panic. I was in the height of fear and panic. I'll never forget it. And it was the most profound feeling of my life, because what happens after what you fear comes true, your life changes. And we spend so much of our time on this side of the wall thinking, I never want to hit that wall or go through it because it's gonna be too painful. And so we walk around with the fear instead of having experienced what the fear manifests into. And when we do that, we never live life the way we want to. This is why taking risks is such a wonderful thing sometimes. When you take a risk of honoring yourself and honoring your boundaries, you get to find out what your fear manifests into. And for me, every time I honored my boundaries, and it was scary, but every time I did it, every time I spoke up, every time I said something for me or someone else, every time I protected myself in that moment and said something like, I will not take that disrespect. I will not accept it. I will not tolerate that behavior. Every time I said something like that, I honestly feared that the worst thing would happen. And for me, every single time, what I expected didn't happen. I expected to get punched in the face. I expected to get fired. I expected so much, and that fear was driving every decision in my life that I decided that I was sick of it. I'm sick of walking around in fear. You should be too. You should be sick of walking around in fear. All right, you have a fear of being alone, so you get into a relationship, and what do? You have a self-fulfilling prophecy where you run away, and now you're alone. But now you're alone, and you have this fear, so you go back to the person, and now you're in a situation where you can't honor your boundaries, because if you honor your boundaries, you think that the person's going to leave you. And when they violate your boundaries, which they may not even know about, or maybe they do, but they violate them, and then you leave the relationship, and it's a constant cycle of self-fulfilling prophecy and fear and not being your genuine self, and then fear, and then it just keeps recycling. And I don't have to tell you something you already know. This is exactly what you're going through. But I'm saying that there's a point where you have to look at the results you're getting and say, I am sick of these results. I'm sick of it. Believe me, when you get to the sick of it point, when you get to that point where you are so sick of the results you're getting, you're going to say, I don't care what happens to me. This isn't the same as I feel so defeated that I'm going to go be depressed and I'm going to commit suicide. Nothing like that. This is not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about when somebody taps you on the forehead. I've used this example before. When somebody taps you on the forehead and it's irritating and you tell them to stop, and then they keep tapping and it's irritating and you tell them to stop, and you grab their finger and they pull it away, and then they keep tapping your forehead and you tell them to stop, and then you walk away and they follow you and they keep tapping you on the forehead and you tell them to stop again, but they don't stop and they keep tapping, and then you finally say, get the F away from me, you son of a B, you know, you just lose it. That's the point. You don't care what happens to you because you are so sick
of the behavior. This is where you need to go sometimes. You need to get so sick of the behavior, even if it's your own behavior, even if you are doing the behavior, you need to get so sick of it because you're getting the worst results that you need to get to a point where you don't care what happens to you. You know what? There's a disclaimer at the beginning of the show that this is my opinion and you should see a professional. And the professional may tell you to use a gratitude journal. They may say that. They may help you through some healing processes. This is great. All good stuff. But you tuned into this show and I go a different direction. And that's the direction I like to go because honestly, when I think of somebody tapping my forehead over and over and over again, and something like that did happen when I was a child, and I knocked the kid out. And that was me, afraid of confrontation, never wanting to fight. And it got to the point where I was so sick of it, I didn't care anymore. And I knocked him out. I don't know if he was knocked out because I was a kid, but he went down on the ground and he was holding his mouth because I punched him in the mouth. It's the only person I ever hit like that. And he got up and he left and I felt, wow, I felt amazing. I just couldn't believe I did it. But I got to that didn't care point. I totally didn't care what happened to me at that point because I was done. I was done with his behavior. He was irritating me and he wouldn't stop even after I told him to stop. You can get to that point. You will get to that point. You just have to let yourself do it. Because what happens after you get to that point, after you don't care, and I'm not saying that you should punch anyone, I'm just saying there's a point where you feel so irritated by the results that you're getting or the behavior of someone else that it doesn't matter what you lose. It just matters that it stops. And when you stop it, something changes, something shifts inside of you. And that shift is what makes the difference. The shift is that profound experience. That wall is finally toppled over and you're able to cross it and you never look back the same way and you never look ahead the same way. It's different. It feels different. So I share all of this with you with the disclaimer, yes, this is unorthodox. Yes, it's risky. Yes, you could get hurt. For me, the reason I risked getting hurt is because I was sick of getting hurt. And that's where I went. And this is an option for you if you allow yourself to imagine what would happen, because a lot of this can be done in your mind. What would happen if I had no choice but to honor my boundaries and say what was on my mind? Because that's where I'm going with you. I want you to imagine what would happen if I were to honor my boundaries and say what was on my mind. And then you drill in from there, because your first answer is never going to be enough. Your first answer is going to be, well, I'm too scared to do it, so I'm not going to do it. Okay, but what would happen if you did? What would happen? I want you to go there and then go to the next place. Okay, what would happen if you did? Now, what would happen next? And what would happen next? And what would happen next? You need to go there when you keep getting the same results, when you are walking around in fear because you're on this side of the wall. You need to go there. You need to get to that point where you meet the fear, you face the fear. You may even allow what you fear to happen just to confirm that what you're thinking might happen is either right or wrong. This is risky. It's mostly emotionally risky, unless you're around physically dangerous people. And if you are, you don't need to be around those people. Those people are on a different level of unhealed trauma, and they are doing things that are hurting others in such a way that you got to stay away from them. But there are emotionally dangerous people, and sometimes you need to let them know that you will not accept their behavior. I won't accept that behavior, and I don't want you to ever do it again. This is taking charge of your life. And the last thing I want to talk about is you take charge of your life as if you love yourself more than everyone. You not only love yourself, but you will protect yourself in an empowered way. not in a fearful way, because protecting yourself by running away, yes, we can do that too. The fight or flight mechanism kicks in and we want to get away from things that hurt us. But what we do is imagine all these things that hurt us and we make up these scenarios that it's going to be too painful to handle. It will be painful. If you've never honored yourself, if you've never stood up for yourself and said something like, I will not tolerate that disrespect, please don't do that again, that's scary as hell. But when you do it, you're going to find that you can do it, and you're going to be able to do it again and again and again. And this person said, how do I love myself? That's how you do it. That's how you do it. You stand up for yourself. You tell yourself that I am here for you. I've got this. I'm going to handle this. I will take care of this. It's almost like you're separating from the fearful part of yourself. What is that? That's our inner child. That's the one that went through the trauma. So we sometimes have to separate from that inner child, become the protector in our lives, but the one who doesn't run, the one who says, back off, because I'm protecting this little child inside of me. I'm protecting this inner child. I'm protecting the vulnerable part of me, the wounded part of me. And that part of me cannot take this abusive behavior anymore. It cannot take your disrespect. It cannot take your lying, your deception, your manipulation, your control. I cannot take that anymore, because you're speaking for both parts of yourself, your inner child and the adult protector. I'm sure you can make up all kinds of parts. There are modalities in therapy that talk about that. There's a protector part. There's a judge part. There's a inner child part. There's all kinds of people in there that can help you. You know, my analytical part's going to come out. Great. Let me just analyze this. Wait, I need my discerning part. I need my judgmental part so I can run that by him. It might be something you do, but I don't really teach that here. So what I look at is that when we are in fear, we very likely have a wounded inner child. And that inner child needs you. She needs your protection. That's how you practice self-love. You are compassionate to that scared little child inside of you. You show her that no matter what happens, you are there for her. And I know it's hard to do that when you have no reference of what that means. Your reference is being in a family that neglected you, treated you badly, hurt you, so you may not know how to do it, but really inside you do know how. You're just afraid. And because you never learned maybe the best coping mechanisms or learned how to defend yourself or honor your boundaries, that is brand new to you. And because it's brand new, you don't know what happens when you do it. And so this is when you start to practice doing it. And when you practice this, that's how you get better. That's how you feel better. That's how your inner child knows that someone is there for her, because her caretakers couldn't be. They had something else going on. They had problems. Maybe they were raised in such a way that made them toxic because they were raised by toxic people. Or maybe they're just jerks. There are people that are just jerks and you can't be around them and you can't trust what they say. That is my final piece of advice. Never trust what a toxic person says about you. You cannot trust someone that hurts you and also says they love you. And I don't mean hurt every now and then and, you know, the arguments that we get in and stuff like that. I'm talking about the drip feeding effect of emotional abuse and physical abuse that happens constantly. It's a continuous drip feeding, tapping on your forehead over and over and over again until you either stand up to it or have no choice but to accept it. And as a child, you probably didn't have a choice, but as an adult, now you do. And that's where I want to leave you. There's so much more to talk about here, but I want to give you something to go with. And I know the direction I'm taking you here is a very scary direction, but you do have to practice this. It is something that is absolutely worth practicing. Yes, it's risky. Yes, it's scary. And the reason I share this with you is because you're either going to continue getting the same results by doing the same things over and over again, or you're going to practice something new that will absolutely change your life. Because once you start protecting that inner child and loving yourself, loving that inner child, everything else will start shifting
in your life. Your results will change. And all the fears that you used to have will start to dissipate. They'll dissolve because you are showing up for yourself in the best way possible. And then you'll start making empowered decisions instead of decisions based on fear. I hope this has been helpful. Huge challenges today, huge stuff that we talked about. And there's so much more to talk about here, but continue listening to this show and look up my previous episodes and look up the episodes on love and abuse over at loveandabuse.com to talk about all the controlling and manipulative stuff that people will put you through so that you understand that this isn't about you at all. It's about them and how they make you feel about yourself and what they make you believe about yourself. That's sometimes our worst enemy, is believing something about ourselves that isn't true. You know what? You're all that. You are a catch. Always remember that. Thanks for joining me. We'll be right back with my thank yous and my goodbyes and my final words right after this. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Overwhelmed Brain. I want to thank our sponsor today, Best Fiends. Head over to the Apple App Store or Google Play and look up Best Fiends. That's like friends without the R. Best Fiends. It's a heck of a fun game. And I also want to thank the patrons of the week, the financial supporters of this show, Carol, Brad, Holly, Jessica, Jamie, Crystal, Samaya, I still think I'm saying that wrong, and Angel. I appreciate all of you. Thank you for your patronage. And also the person who donated, Maria, you are very generous. I'm going to read the message that you sent momentarily. But Maria, thank you for your donation. It was totally not necessary, and I'll tell you why I say that in a minute. But thank you, everyone that supports the show. If you find this show of value and you want to give back, head over to moretob.com. And you can choose to give a single donation or become a monthly contributor, which puts you in the Patreon program that has all kinds of extra goodies over there. MoreTOB.com. And I mentioned the Love and Abuse podcast. If you are in a difficult relationship and you're trying to navigate it and you're trying to figure out if you're the abusive one or are you being manipulated, are you being abused yourself, head over to LoveAndAbuse.com and check that out. And also, I run a program for emotional abusers who want to change over at healedbeing.com if you're looking to heal yourself of hurtful behavior. And finally, thanks to Kevin McLeod of Incompetech.com for some of the music transitions in The Overwhelmed Brain. And like I said, I'm going to read you a message from Maria. I'm going to leave some details out because I read one of her messages on the air a while back, and I want to keep her privacy. She said, "Paul, I was thrilled to hear my email read as I was walking today. I wanted to express my deepest gratitude by offering a donation. Your advice was very helpful, and I will learn to accept my decision, live free, and own it. Easier said than done, but I'm working on it. Your podcast has helped me tremendously and has actually become a part of my fitness routine. As a relatively useless aside, I have been listening to you for a while, and then I decided to look up your profile." Oh yeah, I forgot about this part. "I was disappointed to see how good-looking you were, superficially thinking that someone who looks like that could not have any depth, especially a man." Oh my God. Talk about judgment, huh? "I will work on that. Anyway, you proved me wrong. Keep inspiring us. The world needs you." Thank you, Maria. That is, I'm blushing and I am grateful, and I probably shouldn't have read that because now people are thinking, oh, he really is a narcissist. No, I'm not reading it because I'm a narcissist. I read it because Maria donated and she didn't have to. You didn't have to donate. I read her message on the air and I was glad to do it. I was glad to help out. And like I said, I'm not going to tell you which episode it was because I want to keep her privacy, and what she said was confidential, and I don't want to reveal anything. Thank you, Maria. You are too kind. I am 51 as of this recording, so as I get older, I start seeing things in the mirror, and to have somebody say, "Hey, you're good looking," I'll take it. I will take it, and I will keep taking it because, yeah, I have to remember my own teachings. I'm all that.
I'm all that. I'm a good catch. If my self-esteem or my self-worth ever takes a hit, I'm going to read this message back to myself. So thank you, Maria. Thank you for your words, and thank you for your donation. Very generous. If you write to me and I use your message on the air, you don't have to donate. But she did, and I am grateful. Thank you so much. And for my final words, I just want to ask you one question. What do you want to be? That is a very generic question, but the reason I ask it is because when you know what you want to be, I look at that as how you want to show up in the world. So when people look at you, they can say, wow, you are that. So I think of myself and, you know, there's a lot of things I want to be, but let's just say I want to be a person of integrity. I already consider myself a person of integrity, but that's what I want to be. I always want to be a person of integrity. So when somebody looks at me, they can say, hey, you are a person of integrity. How about I'm a person of good character? How about I'm honest? How about I'm respectful? How about I have good manners? I want to be all these things. And I do my best to be those things at all times. I want people to look at me and think that. And if they think that, then I've accomplished something. But it's not like I'm looking for compliments. I'm not looking for somebody to say, hey, you're an honest guy. Hey, you're a man of integrity. That's not my point. I just want to feel that inside of me. I want to be that. I want to be that person. And the reason I bring that up is because when you know who you want to be and you know how you want to feel about yourself, that's what you're fighting for. That's what you're standing up for. That's what you're risking things for. When somebody can look at me and say, wow, Paul is a person of integrity and honesty, and he really stands up for himself. He knows how to honor his boundaries. When they look at me and think that, I'm going to stand up for that. And what I mean by that is it can be very scary. It can be very scary to think, oh boy, I have to honor my boundaries in this moment. I have to be the person of integrity in this moment. I have to stand up and be the person that I want others to see in this moment. I tell you what, that has helped me many times. Even when I first began this show and I had to see my stepfather for the first time and stand up to him, that was the thought that went through my mind. Am I going to be the person that I want others to see me as? Or am I going to be that same old scared little child that always bows down to him? And I chose to be the person I wanted to be. And being that person was more important than whatever was going to happen by standing up for myself. In that moment, I remember being the person I wanted to be was more important than anything. And that's what gave me the strength, the courage, and the words to say what I needed to say. And I made it through that moment. And because I made it through that moment, I felt better about myself. A weight lifted off of me. This fear that I was carrying around for so long, it dissolved. It was gone. I was able to get through the scariest moment of my life of standing up to someone that I've never stood up to, and the fear was gone. The wall collapsed. And when it did, I saw the future in an entirely different way. That's why I'm asking, who do you want to be? Because when you figure that out and you're sure about it, that's what you're fighting for. And I don't mean fighting, but that's what you're going to stand up for. That is what you want to bring to fruition. That you. So keep working on that and always keep an open mind, because that's how you step into your power so that you can create that you. You can create the life you want. Always take steps to grow and evolve. You are powerful beyond measure. And above all, and this is something I absolutely know to be true about you, you are amazing.